are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, October 26, 2016. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, vets reenlistment signing bonus clawed back, and now, just moments ago, put on hold by Ash Carter. Also, the fact-free media is a symptom of the Republicans' problem, not its cause. Why the left is fighting a carbon tax in Washington state. And Hillary Clinton has a crushing lead amongst the youth, the young youths. Meanwhile, Trump heavily invested in the Dakota Access Pipeline and vice versa. Also, it turns out he's a hat salesman, not a presidential candidate.
It's true.
Republicans working overtime across the country to suppress the vote. And a massive $14.7 billion Volkswagen settlement. Still more to come. And lastly, ladies and gentlemen, on the fun half today, I will be debating Steve Kerbell, who is a, or who was, I should say, a presidential hopeful in the Libertarian Party. And he reached out to us after the Daryl Perry interview.
You're a terrible person.
No, he didn't say that.
No,
Steve
I'm
was
saying
very
that.
Polite.
I'm saying.
Said, you know, I think I might want to take a crack at this. So, all that and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I mean there was a couple. I've got a bunch of pieces here that I want to. I want to convince you to read. I don't know. You know, sometimes like I see an article or long essay or whatnot, and think, you know, maybe we should have this person on. And sometimes it's tough to book that person, or I'm not sure if it, you know. So it's one of those days. But I want to start with what appears to be a pretty important agreement in terms of climate change. Now, climate change never really came up in the general election.
Didn't.
It did not. I mean, it's sort of, as I was saying that, I'm like, is that possible? That there was not one question about climate change in any of the vice presidential or presidential debates? I mean, for normal people, little over 50%, maybe 60% in this country. For normal people, it is perhaps recognized as the greatest security threat to this country and certainly threat to civilization that we face. You know, when you put aside, of course, aliens coming down. But, and you know, this is something that the military has said. I mean, this is not controversial amongst normal people. So one would have imagined like this would come up in the debates because the debates are essentially the manifestation of the normal person candidate and then, I guess, the Republican candidate. But it did not come up. And I'm not sure why this piece didn't, why this story did not get more of coverage, but I guess it is to a certain extent because of the presidential election. And this took place almost well, a week and a half ago. So negotiators met from more than 170 countries in Kigali, Rwanda. Never been there. And they were negotiating and signing off on what was actually an amendment to a deal called the Montreal Protocol, which was signed in 1987. And that was to deal with the hole in the ozone layer. We don't talk much about the hole in the ozone layer anymore because it's gone. We fixed the ozone layer through regulation. Maybe this will come up in our debate today. By agreeing with countries across the globe and obviously imposing regulations in this country, as they did in other countries, to limit coolants called chlorofluorocarbons. I always miss that fluoro. I just call them chlorocarbons, but they're chlorofluorocarbons or CFCs. And I think part of that also, there was some stuff in the spray cans too, but it's, it has to do more with stuff that you use in the context of refrigerators. The Kigali Amendment expands the use of that stuff in air conditioners and refrigerators across the globe. And this, unlike the Paris Accord, is actually a signed document. And I guess we don't need to have it signed off because our standards may be already there. The Kigali deal was 7 years in the making. The compromise between rich nations and poorer ones, which are generally hotter ones, including some where rising incomes are just starting to bring air conditioners within reach. Wealthier nations will freeze production of HFCs more quickly than poorer countries, though some nations, including those in Africa, elected to phase the chemicals out more rapidly than required because, why? They realize global warming is an even greater threat to them because they're in warmer climates. And the idea of droughts, food shortages, is more real to them. It includes specific targets and timetables to replace HFCs with more planet-friendly alternatives. Includes trade sanctions to punish scofflaws and an agreement by rich countries to help finance the transition of poor countries to the costlier replacement products. It will lead to the reduction of the equivalent of 70 billion tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. That's about two times the carbon pollution produced annually by the entire world. So it basically buys us 2 years. The Kigali deal came about in part because Mr. Obama, as he sought to build a legacy of tackling climate change, elevated the obscure effort to amend the Montreal Protocol to a top White House priority. He began paving the way to the HFC deal at a 2013 Get Acquainted meeting with the Chinese President Xi Jinping at the Sunnylands Golf Estate in California. The two leaders agreed to make a deal to reduce the use of HFCs a priority, which was a major concession from China, the world's largest producer of HFC. Since then, American and Chinese companies have increased production of HFC replacement chemicals. A major chemical makers in both countries stand to emerge as winners in the deal. So in other words, because Obama was leading from behind by spending all this time on the golf course, he convinced the Chinese to essentially change what they're, you know, and in China, the Chinese have the ability to base, because their economy is centrally planned. I'm not suggesting we should necessarily do that, but that's what they do.
Not quite on that level.
The Chinese leadership can say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. We'll do that. And so they basically say, hey, stop producing HFCs. And instead, you're going to start producing whatever this new stuff is. And so what happens now, they have created a market for these new products in signing this deal. I mean, this is basically how the sort of the so-called green economy is supposed to work, right? You incentivize the production of new equipment or technologies that are not going to be as destructive to the planet. And by regulation, you create those markets. And then we buy a couple more years so that civilization isn't destroyed. Now, I know how contrary that is to the notion of freedom. I know we're all supposed to go around like a license plate and live free or die, right? Those things made by prisoners up in New Hampshire.
Exactly.
But it seemed to work there. And, you know, Obama's done, leading from behind again, talking to those Chinese.
It's actually also a deal. It's broader because China and the United States have agreed on the Paris deal as well. I mean, this is something that Obama's been really good on, even while there's been these major conflicts around.
The Paris deal came from a mutual agreement that they had.
Yes.
I should say they. China and the United States.
And now... And they're sort of synchronized on that. So even though there's all these conflicts around South China Sea and around hacking and things have really deteriorated, this has actually been something that is not only good in and of itself, but it's sort of helped. Like if Russia and the United States had some type of common framework like on climate that they had, that might help us not completely spinning out of control with them. And yeah, it's helped us with China. So that's something that he's actually been very successful on.
Maybe after President Clinton, she can send Donald Trump as an emissary.
Yeah. Let's do something on global warming, guys. Am I right?
Let's do this.
They don't want to do anything. I think Russia has got some similar sort of global warming addressing hesitancy that other big fossil fuel producing nations have.
Right.
So that's an issue there. But China, I mean, also, of course, Obama went and apologized to the Chinese and offered to give them back rubs.
Disgusting. So disgusting.
So sorry for the opium wars. Can I do anything for you, gentlemen? Can I get on my knees? Thank you, Mr. Zhao. I apologize for being American.
Folks, Periscope data is the ultimate tool for fast and flexible data visualization. Why run slow queries on an old spreadsheet data when Periscope data allows you to run, visualize, and share analysis over billions of data rows in just seconds? Answer the big question instead of running routine SQL tasks again and again and again. Periscope data is fast, powerful, and effortless to connect. Your analysts are going to love this. It's going to save them a lot of time. It's going to save them so much time. And it's going to allow everyone across your business who has something to learn from the data that your business is generating, it's going to allow them to learn it far less effort, which means just greater knowledge, more success at your business. It's got blazing fast query execution powered by massive Amazon clusters, fast workflow. It's designed for analysts by analysts to help you accomplish your tasks as effortlessly as possible. Fast sharing, internal collaboration, external sharing, and embedding in your app takes just moments. There's no setup cost or time. It's easily reversible. It takes one click to disconnect if you decide you don't want to move forward in terms of just trying it out. Plug and play for immediate use and immediate value. You type SQL, you get charts. You can analyze data 150 times faster. Do you have any idea if like we could do anything around here 150 times faster, what it would do for this business?
It's almost as fast as me.
Matt does.
Periscope data is a powerful and intuitive tool that will bring your SQL analysis to the next level. Get a free trial today by going to www.periscopedata.com/majority. That's periscopedata.com/majority. I want to get to this story about, while we're talking about climate change, there's a great Dave Roberts story, and I may try and get him on. So I'm not gonna go into this too deeply. But, you know, one of the things that I am very thankful for, knock on wood, assuming that we have a Democratic president elect on November 9th, is that, and this is a little selfish on my part, but it just the types of shows that I like to do are just about finding out how the process works, in terms of implementing policy, how the process works in terms of doing politics, broadly speaking. And that's why, you know, It's why we don't win anymore. I'm not up here talking about, you know, how exit polling proves that, you know, Bernie Sanders won the election, or how, you know, coming up with the 15th theory as to why, you know, someone, I'm not going to get into this. Anyways, look, I still have my own personality defects that they get me off course and when I'm talking about interesting things. So Dave Roberts has this piece, and we're going to put a link to it. There's a ballot initiative 732 in Washington State. Washington State, one of the more progressive states in the country, certainly when it comes to the environment. It's a carbon tax, and it would be the first carbon tax in the U.S., the biggest in North America, and one of the most ambitious in the world. Canada, I believe, has one. Or maybe local ones, you know, what do they call states, provinces. So this is what it would do. It would impose a tax on carbon emissions, starting at $15 per ton in 2017, rising to $25 per ton in 2018, and then rising every year thereafter at 3.5% plus inflation, tops out at $100 a ton in 2016 dollars. The tax would reach citizens in the form of a gas tax and a tax collected by electric utilities. It would then reduce the state sales tax by one percentage point. It would fund the working families tax rebate, which bumps up, essentially, it supplements the federal earned income tax credit. And then it would eliminate the business and occupation tax on manufacturing. So the idea is this would be revenue neutral. I'm going to put aside whether or not the analysis of whether it's actually going to be revenue neutral aside for a moment. Conceptually, the idea is revenue neutral. The tax cuts are in there to sort of win conservatives over. The revenue neutrality is there to win conservatives over. The notion of where the tax cuts are is supposed to help with liberal support, because a sales tax is very regressive, tends to be regressive. In other words, if I'm making $15,000 a year, and I got to pay sales tax on stuff that everybody has to buy, that's a greater percentage of my income than it is if I'm making $150,000 a year. It would eliminate the business and occupation tax on manufacturing so as to offset the cost of the program to them, and or to mitigate the cost of the program so you don't have manufacturing fleeing from the state. It's Carbon Washington, Carbon WA, is the group that put it on the ballot. And essentially written by a climate economist. Now, here's the weird part. Liberal groups in Washington state, labor, Democratic Party, whatnot, they're against it. And they call it, I think it's the Alliance for Jobs and Clean Energy. And broadly speaking. And they believe that Carbon Washington's claims are misleading, that its policy is fatally incomplete and insufficient. And they think it would set back climate progress. And broadly speaking, it comes down to the idea that this sets a model. It supplants other efforts to get a carbon tax whose proceeds, rather than being revenue neutral, could actually promote clean energy and move the ball forward in terms of changing technologies. That it would help those communities, because we all know, right, who suffers first in terms of the impact of any disaster, natural or others. It's generally low-income people. You could say that broadly across the world. We just talked about with the Kigali Accords, and you could say that about within the context of cities. And there's no funding to help those people who are most affected by climate change. And it gets a lot more complicated and sophisticated than I'm just describing. I'm just doing very broad. There's some people whose perspective it is like there's just, you know, hurt egos and feelings. And there's others that like, look, we're setting a template. Because, you know, any carbon reduction anywhere is worth it the same amount anywhere else. But when a template is formed, then it starts to replicate itself across the country. And if you're going to start in a place like Washington State, you may want to wait a year or two because of the implications of what it's actually going to do to the climate in Washington State is less than what it would do if that becomes a template and it is brought and it is used across the country. So it's a fascinating piece. Maybe we'll have Dave Roberts on. See. He's always tough to book.
Okay.
Because he's on the West Coast.
Okay.
And I know he's got to take his kids to school, I think.
There was a lot of controversy, I think, because in the Clinton administration, I think Al Gore had some type of modest sort of gas tax that he was wanting to push through in 1993. And if I know the political history correctly, it was the opposition to that was who you'd expect, carbon companies and senators and congresspeople that represented those interests. But also some of the more kind of populist advisors were like, we're already sort of bailing on so many of our middle class commitments and we're doing NAFTA. And now you're just basically asking more people to pay more taxes on basic energy consumption. Well, so it's always been a potential conflict.
Well, this
I know this is different.
Offsets
it. No, I know it offsets. That one didn't have an offset, but it set the template, I guess.
Right. When you look back at that time, then maybe it would be a good template for that time. But who knows? And it's an interesting piece. I just wanted to flag it for people. Also, I feel like I need to flag this. Now, for you people, I'm surrounded by young people in the office. Folks come in, weren't even aware that there was a time where we had cars that were not hybrids. You know, things like that. I don't know if you knew, guys, there was a time where you didn't have ATMs. That, I know, freaks you guys out. Right? You were never alive without ATMs. You know
that's
how you
true.
Get money from the bank?
Matt's too lazy for even ATMs, so that's terrifying. That's
right. Wait, like physical money?
You would actually have a printed bank book that would give you your balance, and you would have to go to the bank to get cash.
Not good.
And they were open the exact same hours they're open now.
Never.
Like, you contemplate, right? Come and contemplate this. Now they didn't have like little tiny, but they didn't have that many branches anyway. Maybe they've cut down on branches. I don't know. All right. The reason why I preface it with this is that 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 22 years ago, there was a guy named Newt Gingrich who somehow became the Speaker of the House, became the leader of the Republican Party. And a pudgy little man, sort of like a not very bright man's idea of what a bright man is. And so a bit of a scam artist. And he led the charge to the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And then it comes out because what will we tell the children? It was the refrain we always heard. But what will we tell the children about Bill Clinton having this affair in the White House with an intern? And but she wasn't an intern, I think, at the time. But that's how she got to the White House. But what will we tell the children? Disgusting stuff the children are forced to learn from the investigation that we have prodded along by Kenstar. That was about four different scandals that they couldn't land, so they had to find something. And the funny part about the moralizing from Newt Gingrich, the absolute outrage. At one point, he said, quote, "I'm going to mention Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton every speech I ever give for the rest of my life."
That's a little bit uneasy just in and of itself.
Yeah. The funny part about that is that he was, I think, either cheating on his wife at that time, who had cancer, or had moved on to the next woman that he had married to cheat on her. I can't remember. But the point is that it's the house that he was living in was not only glass, but it was glass, it was a candy glass, like the breakaway glass they use in movies. And apparently, though, it must have been a very comfortable house, because here he is with Megyn Kelly wanting to firmly place himself in that house again. But he built it very conveniently with a sort of like a big bay window, which, of course, had no window because the whole house is glass, that allowed him to lob stones from. And here he is.
On camera, talking Megyn, about grabbing
I just
women.
Heard, look, I just heard you go through this with Governor Pence. I get it. I know where you're coming from. But let me point out something to you.
Sure.
The three major networks spent 23 minutes attacking Donald Trump that night and 57 seconds on Hillary Clinton's secret speeches. You don't think this is a scale of bias worthy of Pravda and Izvestia? I mean, you want to know why Donald Trump's had a rough time?
If Trump is a sexual predator, that is...
He's not a sexual predator.
Okay,
you
that's
can't
your
say
opinion.
That.
I'm
you
not taking a position on
You could not defend that statement.
I'm
sick and tired of people like you using language that's inflammatory that's not true.
Excuse me, Mr.
Donald,
Speaker.
Donald Trump
You have no idea
this...
whether it's true or not. What we know is that
neither,
there are at
neither
least...
Neither do you.
That's right.
Pause
I'm
it for
taking
one
a
second.
Position on...
Let's pause it just for one second here. I don't want to distract people, but if you look at Newt Gingrich just under his chin as he's speaking, it really becomes an entirely different piece.
Don't highlight that.
I don't
That's
know.
It's very
just
cruel
like
to the viewing public.
I know. It's just I'm fascinated for that. I don't know if it's because of the angle I'm looking at the TV, but go ahead.
On it, unlike
yes, you,
you
are. When you use the words, you took a position.
So what
I think
I
it's
said
very
is
unfair of you to do that, Megyn.
Incorrect.
I think that is exactly the bias people are upset by.
I think that your defensiveness on this may speak volumes, sir.
No,
what I said is if
you,
no. Let me make my point, and then I'll give you the floor. What I said is if Trump is a sexual predator, then it's a big story. And what we saw on that tape was Trump himself saying that he likes to grab women by the genitals and kiss them against their will. That's what we saw. Then we saw 10 women come forward after he denied actually doing it at a debate to say that was untrue. He did it to me. He did it to me. We saw reporters. We saw people who had worked with him, people from Apprentice and so on and so forth. He denies it all, which is his right. We don't know what the truth is. My point to you is, as a media story, we don't get to say the 10 women are lying. Oh. We have to cover that story, sir. Oh,
sure. Okay, so it's worth 23 minutes of the three networks to cover that story. And Hillary Clinton in a secret speech in Brazil to a bank that pays her $225,000 saying her dream is an open border where 600 million people could come to America. That's not worth covering.
That is worth
covering.
When
you want to go back
and
through the
did.
Tapes of your show recently, you are fascinated with sex and you don't care about public policy.
Me?
Now, that's
really?
What I get out of watching you tonight.
You know what, Mr. Speaker? I'm not fascinated by sex, but I am fascinated by the protection of women and understanding what we're getting in the Oval Office. And I think the American voters would like
and
to know.
And therefore, we're going to send Bill Clinton back to the East Wing because, after all, you are worried about sexual predators.
Yeah, listen, it's not about me. It's about the women and men of America. And the poll numbers show us that the women of America in particular are very concerned about these allegations and in large part believe that they are a real issue.
And you want to comment? You want to comment on whether the Clinton? Summarily. Do you want to comment on whether the Clinton ticket has a relationship to a sexual predator?
We on the Kelly file have covered that story as well, sir. I will
no,
tell
I
you
just
the poll.
I want to hear you use the words. I want to hear your words. Bill Clinton,
God.
Sexual predator. I dare you. Say Bill Clinton, sexual predator.
Mr. Speaker,
disbarred
we've covered.
Disbarred by the Arkansas
me,
bar. Disbarred by
excuse
the Arkansas
me.
Bar. $850,000 penalty.
Excuse me, sir. We on the Kelly file have covered the Clinton matter as well. We've hosted Kathleen Willey.
Well, try
we've
it.
Covered the examples of him being accused as well, but he's not on the ticket. And the polls also show that
he'll
the American
the,
public is less interested in the deeds of Hillary Clinton's husband than they are in the deeds of the man who asks us to make him president, Donald Trump. We're going to have to leave it at that, and you can take your anger issues and spend some time working on them, Mr. Speaker. Thanks for being
and
here.
You too, and you too. You too.
Hmm. So meek at the end.
So we're taking...
Yeah. Say the words. Say the words. It will put the lotion in the basket.
And you too.
All right. So I think clearly former Fox contributor Newt Gingrich, I believe, has already signed his Trump TV contributor. I mean, here's the, you know, this is the great sorting out, right? I mean, we're seeing this in real time. It's fascinating. This is like, you know, maybe we should get old Matt on the phone just to give us a breakdown on how this would play out in wrestling terms, because that's exactly what we're seeing here. It is absolutely fascinating to watch this from a media story. And also that old, decrepit man claiming that she's fascinated by sex. Here's a guy whose entire political career rose and fell on his attempt to create an obsession about Bill Clinton's relationship cheating on his wife.
No, and still clearly has like an
not done
sort of immense personal resentment of Bill Clinton, which is very uncomfortable to watch.
Well, you know, because he didn't have him sit in the front of the airplane. That's what the
Now this is another piece of ancient history.
Did you know
have
that?
I do know this one, but I'm sure a lot of people
that
don't.
Was the big issue with he was mad that President Clinton didn't have him sit in the front of. I think
and
it was
that's
Air Force
and he
One.
Shut down government over that, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was like in the mid 90s.
You got to show him who's boss.
They were at a state funeral or something somewhere, yep. Traveling together. And instead of saying, hey, come on up in the front and have some cookies with me, Clinton was like, stay in the back. And he was like, I'm going to shut down government.
I have a feeling that Bill Clinton didn't say anything to him.
Right. Excuse me, loser. I'm going to go harass a woman on my staff and they're actually going to like it.
I have a feeling that Bill Clinton didn't turn to his staff and say, find the most annoying person and bring him up front. We'll see how it feels. I just saw this. Apparently, Charles Blow and Lewandowski almost got a little hot and heated.
Dude, I swear to God,
I
if
will
this friggin' black guy you. Comes to me again, I will like...
Here's now this is interesting. You know, I have there's starting to be a lot of stories, and to a certain extent, you know, we're already doing this on this program, right? And we're talking about antitrust and issues like that. Elizabeth Warren, right now, I mean, this is what is so impressive about Elizabeth Warren as a politician, because you know I was familiar with her through her writings. I think it was like on TPM Cafe. When she was a, I think she was a contracts professor or a professor of bankruptcy at Harvard. And it is amazing the savvy that she has in terms of politics. And here she is going out, perhaps, you know, short of President Obama and maybe Michelle Obama, the single most effective surrogate for Hillary Clinton. She is at a rally, or which one do you have lined up? Okay, so here she is going after Richard Burr. He is running for, obviously, for Senate in North Carolina. North Carolina is a state that it appears that Clinton has a very good chance of winning. Obama won it in 2008 and could be one of the Senate pickup seats. And here she is going after Richard Burr. And then we're going to play a clip of her in New Hampshire on Monday, where she's such an effective surrogate. And what it does is she is building up a cachet or a cash and will spend it in making Hillary Clinton's life, not necessarily her agenda is not to make her life miserable, but her agenda is to push forward an agenda. And if Hillary Clinton's in the way of that, I think that's going to be a problem for Hillary Clinton. Here is Elizabeth Warren talking about Richard Burr.
Trump's been out there. He hadn't been hiding who he is. He's been out there from the very beginning. He's been out there. And where has your senator, Richard Burr, been all this time? You know, I wanted to look this up, make sure I got this right before I came here. Richard Burr said, make no mistake, I am fully supportive of Donald Trump. No dancing around that one. So Donald Trump called Latinos rapists and murderers, and Burr fully supports Trump. Trump called African Americans thugs, and Burr fully supports Donald Trump. Trump attacked a Gold Star family, and Burr fully supports Donald Trump. Trump praised Vladimir Putin and compared himself to dictators. And Burr fully supports Donald Trump. Trump calls women fat pigs and bimbos and brags about sexually assaulting women. And Richard Burr is like a puppy on a leash, sticking right there with Donald Trump. You know, if Richard Burr is just going to be Donald Trump's lapdog, then let him go off and do that. But the people of North Carolina need a strong, independent voice to fight for the families of North Carolina. And that is Deborah Ross. You bet.
Yeah, she has gotten very good on the stump. And can you imagine if she had been on the stump for the past 2 years as a candidate? Dang.
I think that she would be the next president, no doubt. It's actually, that becomes a little bit painful to contemplate.
I have a feeling that she probably has similar moments where she contemplates that. Ladies and gentlemen, this is pretty important to get out there. Because when there's an attack on Western civilization, you need to know it. And when someone who we see as some type of benign musical force is being used as an instrument of that destruction, we need to be even more vigilant. Here is Michael Savage talking about how Obama is using a fairly well-known pop star to destroy Western civilization.
This is the road that your president is ushering the country down. Obama has been going on and on how Trump is not fit to be president. Hillary Clinton has orchestrated a smear campaign on Trump, accusing him of all kinds of things. Meanwhile, the president invites people into the White House who on stage exhibit crude dancing that many times simulate sexual acts while rapping about the most vile ways to treat women. Jay-Z and Beyonce have visited the so-called White House several times. Beyonce, who is beyond reason, who is extolled as a role model to young girls, including, I'm sure, the Obama daughter sings songs like this. When he F me good, I take his A to Red Lobster, because I slay. If he hit it right, I might take him on a flight on my chopper. Isn't that classy? Isn't it great to see Western civilization knocked off its pedestal and replaced by this filth? So Obama has now opened the door and ushered in the absolute destruction of Western civilization. As he said, there are no more standards because Stars and Stripes Forever is dead. Well, down the road, Obama is ushering us. There is no more red, white, and blue that brings us together. It is all black against white. and you have to take sides. And for Hillary Clinton, well, she'll take us down that same road. It's a road that leads to the death of Western civilization.
I feel like he's reading that from somewhere. Maybe he wrote it himself. I'm not sure.
Allahu Akbar.
You know, they said the same thing about the Beatles and Rolling Stone.
And they were right.
Right? Three Dog Night was banned in Boston.
That's incredible.
That was my first live concert ever.
Three Dog Night?
In Disney World in sixth grade.
See?
With my
parents. See how Western civilization, they went from being banned in Boston to being featured at Disney World. My God. We just let this happen. You people disgust me.
If he
take
hits
his,
it
take
right.
His A to lop Red Lobster. Are you kidding? First of all, what happened to the men paying for a meal? Well, all right. And let's get this one more piece of sound in because this is also very disturbing.
Sam, Matt and I really appreciate the progress in that particular area.
Yeah. Oh, you guys don't have to
not
pay
having
for
to pay. Keep listening to Beyonce, guys. Great.
True News. You ever watch that network?
No, I have not.
Well, host Rick Wiles was very concerned at, I mean, it's one thing for Obama to destroy Western civilization by inviting Beyonce to
that's O'Reilly,
to the White
right?
House.
The so-called White House.
To the so-called
the
White
so-called
House.
The so-called White House.
But True Nose host Rick Wiles, it's, I mean, it's like not bad enough that Obama was a Manchurian candidate hell-bent on turning this into our country into an anti-imperialist, socialist, really satellite country for Kenya, right? I mean, just through some type of outpost.
I always tell the Chinese, don't listen to Beyonce. That's for us to destroy our own culture. You have a noble, beautiful civilization. All I can do is apologize, offer you a back rub, whatever you want.
Well, folks, apparently, we've seen Obama, but you ain't seen nothing yet.
Doc, I've heard stories that the Chinese Christians meeting in underground meetings sing hymns to the Lord silently by moving their lips. No words come out because if they're heard, they'll go to prison.
Right.
And so the church just moves their lips to sing the hymns.
Wow.
Just being caught in the act of singing a hymn will send you to prison. That's communism. That's what communism looks like. That's what's coming to America under Hillary Clinton. Barack Obama was just the warm-up act. He was the first full-blown communist to be put in the White House. He got the country softened up for the final act. The final act is Hillary Clinton. She's an old communist from her early days, trained and mentored by Saul Alinsky, a communist organizer who wrote the book Rules for Radicals, dedicated to Lucifer.
Yes.
And Hillary Clinton, as a college student, wrote her thesis on the book. But guess what? The book had not even been published when she wrote her thesis. She had a manuscript given to her directly by Saul Alinsky.
I didn't realize she had it before it was published.
Yes.
Wow.
She's an old communist from way back. She's waited decades to this day. If the American people put her in the White House,
Pause. We
are going into full-blown communism.
I should just tell you folks right now, Hillary Clinton is 170 years old. Go ahead.
And the first thing that happens is the shutdown of all dissent, and then the crackdown on the churches. I promise you, that's what's coming. I can't tell you we're going to be here. I can't tell you that. I mean, you can say, well, what are you going to do? Well, you can't do anything when they shut you down. You understand that? What are you going to do when they shut you down? That's it. I'm not saying I would choose to go away. I'm telling you, they will shut all of us down. They're not going to allow this uprising to continue. This is as close as they've come to being taken down. This collusion that we see in and the WikiLeaks disclosures. Politicians and banks and the media and Hollywood, all of them working together. Folks, this is the invisible Communist Party in America. They're being exposed. The Communist Party is being exposed. They have moles in every sector of our society.
I think even by communist, he means Jews, right? I mean,
that sounds like that to me. As soon as you get the Hollywood one in, I think we know where we're going. I have this great image, though, of Obama being like, come on, Hillary, let them leave. They can't sing hymns anymore. I mean, come on. All right. We're passing you the ball.
They're going to shut us down.
For me, why I, said, we need I your think support. They could have secret churches and basements.
Why we need your support. You can become a member today. I mean, incidentally, you can join this program by becoming a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. You need to help us before they shut us down.
From my perspective, you can do a little bit of secret church services in a basement, but Hillary, no. I mean, full-blown communism. I mean, I'm a softy compared to her.
You know the worst part about being part of this secret cabal?
It's what?
When I was born, they sent me to Hollywood.
Right.
And then they pulled me back. And it's just like, you can't play. You're not in charge of it. They just, you go to Hollywood, you go to the media, you go to the...
Well, every time we come in here, it's like the scene in The Godfather where Pacino goes, every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
It's just like,
they want us in
oh, crap. It's George Soros again.
Mr. Soros wants us in the YouTube lane. So you got to listen or we get taken out. Do we have time for the other Elizabeth Warren clip or no?
Yeah, let's just play that other Elizabeth Warren clip. I didn't get to all the stories about the... Josh Barrow's got a great piece, too, about... Maybe I'll talk about that tomorrow. Because it's also a good piece. No. Here is Elizabeth Warren in New Hampshire on Monday. Again, she is becoming an even better and better surrogate. And each time she does this, right? I mean, it's fascinating to see this and know, just based on our conversation with Barry Lynn the other day, frankly, based on conversations I've had with people who I sort of work in these circles, that she's pressing the Clinton, I guess, transition team and the Clinton campaign for personnel appointments. And so while this is going on also, it's like she increases her value to Clinton and also then increases her leverage. I mean, this is the way that politics work, right? I know it's going to be upsetting to some people that she's on stage with Hillary Clinton. How can she sully herself? She's a sellout.
She's a war criminal.
She might as well be up there tongue-kissing Henry Kissinger.
Honestly, enslaved.
Like the attitude that some people have. But in fact, what she's doing is every time she hammers Donald Trump, every voter that she brings to the polls for Hillary Clinton, she ups her leverage. And she exhibits her strength. And it can either be one that will end up being in conflict with Hillary Clinton or not. And that's, you know, a decision that Clinton has to make. But this is the way the politics are done. And she's become very good at this.
And Donald Trump aggressively disrespects more than half the human beings in this country. He thinks that because he has money, that he can call women fat pigs and bimbos. He thinks because he is a celebrity, that he can rate women's bodies from 1 to 10. He thinks that because he has a mouthful of Tic Tacs, that he can force himself on any woman within groping distance. Well, I got news for you, Donald Trump. Women have had it with guys like you. And nasty women have really had it with guys like you. Yeah. Get this, Donald. Nasty women are tough. Nasty women are smart. And nasty women vote. And on November 8th, we nasty women are going to march our nasty feet to cast our nasty votes to get you out of our lives forever.
Impressive stuff. And obviously, hearkening back to Trump's performance during the last debate where he called Hillary Clinton nasty woman.
Such a nasty woman.
So nasty about the way that you're criticizing me.
Yeah, keep going around. You're all threes. I don't care. At best. You know, they're ugly on the inside, too.
All right, let's do. I just want to do this one too because I was struck by this. Everyone from Britt Hume to members of the Trump campaign tried to deflect from the accusation by Jessica Drake, who's an adult film performer and director, that Trump had been. Tried to pay for sex from her, had been too aggressive. I think it tried to assault her. And here's Katrina Pearson, fresh off her and
her exchange with you.
Her exchange. I mean, I went up to her at the spin room after the debate and thought, as soon as I said, like, hey, can we get back to this whole armrest thing that. One of her security people would just sort of like immediately take me away. And to my shock, she got right back into the armrest debate.
She struck gold on that one.
Yeah, I think so. Well, here she is basically making the claim again because, you know, everybody knows. You always want to come out in public. It is so comfortable for women, particularly with Trump's followers, to come out and speak out against Donald Trump because you get such warm response from like folks on social media and whatnot that people just women just want to come out and do it just for the fame. And here's Katrina Pearson making that argument.
Of something that Donald Trump said on a radio show earlier this week. It was about his latest accuser of sexual assault, former adult film actress Jessica Drake. Let's play that sound.
They'll grab him on the, as they say, on the arm. And once that he grabbed me on the arm, and she's a porn star. Now, you know, this one that we came out recently, he grabbed me and he grabbed me on the arm. Oh, I'm sure she's never been grabbed before. And they make it so... It's all lies.
So Katrina, that line, "Oh, I'm sure she's never been grabbed before," I think that a lot of people say that strikes them, that rubs them the wrong way, because it's almost a suggestion that because she works in pornography, that you can do almost anything you want to her, because what hasn't been done to her?
Well, he's actually just defending himself, and then we find out that this woman is actually promoting her adult film. I guess, industry, if that's what you want to call it. And that's what we've seen. We've seen people come out against Donald Trump just to raise their profiles to sell books or whatever it is that they're selling. But this really has nothing to do with these premiums that are going up. And I have to disagree with you. Mr. Trump has been talking about this. He's talked about on his first day, in his first 100 days, that he wants to repeal and replace Obamacare.
No, I said he talked about it, just not with the same energy and enthusiasm with which he goes after, say, the media or his accusers. But Simone,
yeah, there you go.
It's a mess. Obamacare. Anyway, they're all going to get sued. They're whores. And they're only a 7.2 on a good day. Obamacare is really big league bad.
It's really unbelievable that he can't refrain from talking about women as it, I mean, the way that he does.
He's mentally ill, man.
It's really amazing. And it's also what I always find stunning too, is that, you know, look, Katrina Pearson, who has actually gone on to a reality show. Like, I've seen clips of her on a reality show since she's been working for Trump in this capacity, and just got into a fight and got kicked out, which there's no way you could ever anticipate would be helpful to Trump's campaign, or certainly after the fact you see it, just clearly about her brand. She's talking about a campaign that has spent more money on hats, than stuff like polling, stuff like electoral analysis, on hats, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. And of course, I don't think these people are going away. You know, I should just add, the Trump campaign has stopped doing major donor fundraisers, but they're going full tilt on their online fundraising. So what it suggests to me is how they're making their money is more important to them than how much money they're making. Now, the major donations, that goes out to the Republicans. I don't even think they care about how much money they're bringing in. I think they just want to know who out there is willing to pay us, because we just want that email list so we can hit them up on Wednesday after we lose the election.
Guys, we really need to prioritize the suckers now, okay? Like, that's, I know, right. I say a lot of ridiculous things and I'm mentally ill and I can't control myself, but I do know how to scam dumb people, and we need to stay focused on that right
we
now.
We need to stay totally focused. Really important. Big leak. Big leak. Do we have that last, that I think I sent you that. It was a woman, right? She was the, do you know who I'm talking about? The GOP, Ted Cruz's former thing? You don't have that. No. All right, we'll do that tomorrow. Because there was a piece about Ted Cruz's former, I think, campaign manager, or not campaign manager, one of the top campaign officials, who suddenly had a extended come to Jesus moment about the Republican Party and their treatment of women. Which is pretty awesome.
Wow.
All right. Look, we're going to take a break. Those of you who are members are going to hear an interview, or I guess a debate. I don't know if it's going to be an interview so much, but they'll be interviewing with Steve Kerbell. Steve was one of the gentlemen, they were all men, who ran for the Libertarian Party nomination last year. I think he dropped out sometime in March and ended up supporting Gary Johnson. I don't know if he has any official capacity in that campaign. But we're going to have a little debate about Gary Johnson and about libertarianism. He reached out to us after we interviewed, debated Daryl Perry, who was also one of the other candidates. Now, Daryl didn't appreciate our talk.
He didn't care for you.
He did not care for me. I think he called me a madman.
And a bad, I think also a bad person.
A bad person and a madman.
And a terrible person.
Accused me of attempting to centrally plan freedom, which, guilty.
You're right, Daryl.
What are you going to do? So we're going to welcome Steve on the program, and then maybe we'll have time for some we'll have some time for some phone calls and some IMs. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in a second.